From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
It's never been a comfortable relationship between the federal government and the state on the Kuskokwim River. Each shares management of the river, and each has its own priorities. Now that the federal government has filed a lawsuit against the state, it's come to a head. The Alaska Federation of Natives has sided with the federal government, and as KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, a federal judge has allowed AFN to intervene in the case.
The Kuskokwim River has historically provided a wealth of salmon to communities that hug her shores. Decades ago, her silty waters produced one of the largest king salmon fisheries in the state, enough to have both subsistence and commercial fisheries, as well as an abundance of chum salmon, sockeyes, and silvers. But over the decades, king salmon numbers crashed to a crisis point that restricted and sometimes even closed subsistence harvests. At that point, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service stepped in to enforce a federal rural subsistence priority in the lower stretches of the river, which flow through a federal wildlife refuge. The state continued to manage the fisheries upriver, outside the refuge. But in 2021, the state opened up the whole river to subsistence fishing to all Alaska residents because its managers felt there was a surplus of fish that season. But the federal government filed suit. It argued the state had not only overstepped its bounds, but also failed to manage for a rural subsistence priority, effectively breaking federal law. The Alaska Federation of Natives says it sought to join the federal lawsuit because it believes the state's actions threaten subsistence protections under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA. AFN's legal counsel, Nicole Borromeo, says also at stake the landmark Katie John court case, which affirmed a rural priority for subsistence fishing.
It does more than challenge Katie John. The state is arguing in no uncertain terms that Katie John is no longer good law.
Katie John was a Mentasta elder who successfully sued the state to open a portion of the Copper River to subsistence fishing, where her family had fished for generations. It was a legal battle that went on for decades.
We fought the battle. We've won the battle. We thought it was a war, but apparently the state has yet decided to mount up again for another legal attack on the rural priority.
State Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang says it's the federal government that's picking this fight, not the state, which is simply following its constitutional duty to provide equal access to fish and game.
85% of those king salmon spawn above the refuge. So they're basically managing within the refuge for subsistence priority, but that's impacting our ability to meet escapements in the upper river.
The commissioner also says the federal government is infringing on the state's authority over navigable waters.
If we didn't respond to this, we would have accepted the fact that the federal government could replace state management with federal management on any waterway of Alaska that touches a federal reserve, and that becomes untenable.
AFN agrees with the state on that point, that this fight has far-reaching implications that will affect Alaska Natives across the state, and that the case may eventually have to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to be resolved.
The state's been very clear that it will only stop if the U.S. Supreme Court tells them to. So we will need a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court.
I think it needs to be settled.
It's an old battle that stems from a problem that's hard to fix, conflicts in the Alaska Constitution with federal law that can only be resolved through a state constitutional amendment, which remains politically out of reach. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
More than 20 schools around the Kenai Peninsula get to raise salmon eggs in the classroom as part of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Salmon in the Classroom program. KBBI's Jamie Deep filed this report on students who participated in egg takes in the Southern Peninsula.
Students from three different schools cheered as Alaska Department of Fish and Game staff fertilized salmon eggs during an egg take presentation at the Anchor River State Recreation Area on Tuesday morning. Staff members continued to give presentations to nine more schools for a total of roughly 400 students that day. The department has done egg takes for over 20 years. They're part of the Salmon in the Classroom program, where students learn more about the fish through activities and presentations. The Division of Sport Fishing's Acting Area Management Biologist Jenny Gates and Aquatic Education Biologist Kayla Hanch came down from the Saldana office and walked students through salmon spawning and anatomy.
The female will use this big, powerful fin. This is called the caudal fin. Can you say that as a group?
Caudal
fin. Our female will lay on her side using this big, powerful fin. She'll dig out her nest. And again, what is our nest?
Red.
After the presentations, eggs went to the classrooms where students like Quinn Blackstock will get to see the early stages of the salmon life cycle.
We're going to be doing an egg take, and we're going to grab eggs and we're going to put them in a tank and watch them live and hatch.
The department also held presentations at Bear Creek for students in Saldatna, Hope, and Seward. In addition to the egg take, students got to see the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association's Bear Creek Weir and a salmon dissection. The department also delivered eggs to six other schools that did not attend the presentation. Gates said the program's goal is to teach students more about an important part of living in Alaska.
The program's intended to foster stewardship to this valuable natural resource that Alaskans greatly appreciate, enjoy, and it's what makes part of Alaska unique.
For Hanch, it was cool seeing students of different ages learning about salmon during her first year of giving these presentations.
It's really fun to see just how excited the students are, and they're so easily engaged in the presentation, and you can really see they're taking it all in, what we're talking about.
Students like Blackstone seem to agree.
This is a really fun experience, and I'm glad to be doing it.
In the spring, classes will release their eggs, which will be fry by then, into a permitted landlocked lake on the peninsula. Throughout the year, the department will also hold classroom salmon dissections, ice fishing, and an end-of-year salmon celebration, an event for students to gather and learn more about this ubiquitous Alaskan fish. In Anchor Point, I'm Jamie Deep.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Bristol Coastal Bay's commercial fishery has a history of both competition and coordination between different interest groups. This summer, KDLG's Christina McDermott sat down with Dan Barr, a retired Bristol Bay fisherman who spent his nearly 40-year career advocating for the fishery by connecting people to push for change, including helping to pass federal legislation to protect returning salmon and other sea life, and providing an open radio network for fishers to discuss fishery issues. Here is this profile.
Dan Barr is 81 and a half years old. He fished in Bristol Bay for just about half his life.
It's been just such a great part of my life. I mean, one of the things is every year I came home, it was like to live out something new that got loose in me.
Barr spent much of his career finding ways to connect different people with each other. For over two decades, he was president of the Bristol Bay Drift Netters Association, an organization formed in the 1980s that aimed to unify the fleet. There, he helped publish newsletters about issues around the fishery, like practices in the Pacific that affected its health. Throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, vessels in international waters cast nets that were up to 40 miles long, collecting millions of salmon that were on their way to Bristol Bay. This is called high seas interception. The practice also results in high levels of bycatch. Nets trap everything from whales and sharks to seabirds. Barr worked with different interest groups and pushed for federal legislation to address the problem. In the early 90s, he formed a coalition that helped pass the High Seas Drift Net Act, which aimed to restrict large-scale drift net fishing in international waters. He says he worked with dozens of conservation and user groups like Greenpeace, as well as sports and other commercial fishers.
Let's get a coalition of sports, environmental, and commercial. And we got 29 organizations to sign on, and we wrote a letter to each U.S. senator.
Barr attributes their success to collaboration. Their efforts helped restrict net size and made it illegal to import fish harvested with large drift nets. The act itself brought more visibility to both the bycatch and fish interception issue that affected both the ecological and economic health of the fishery.
You know, we live in a world that's made some gains and constructive things are doing, and it's one of the things that came out of Bristol Bay.
Barr also worked within Bristol Bay. He started an open radio channel for the Ugashik District where fishers could talk to each other about important issues during slow hours.
So we got on one of the local VHF frequencies and said, spread the word. And so every night we'd go through and talk about what we knew about Bristol Bay, what we know about happening in the North Peninsula, what I know about the high seas, what about safety.
He says some discussions on the radio lasted 3 hours. Through it all, Barr says his favorite part about fishing in Bristol Bay was spending time with his family and connecting with friends.
The greatest part was fishing with my family. We had 10 members fish in Bristol Bay.
Now he reflects on the people he met there.
And the friends I made. I mean, the amazing people that are there and the people that have retired that have become longtime friends that are really quality people. So it's the people aspect first.
Today, Barr is battling cancer in Seattle. His son fishes on his former boat. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.